Hey everybody, so joining you again live from the Transportation Research Board Annual Conference 2018, believe it or not. We're excited to be here with Laura Bliss. Many of you probably follow her on Twitter and know that she is writing some great articles for CityLab right now across a spectrum of issues, including transportation. She's delving into everything from regulations related to automated vehicles to issues around riding the subway, which she takes regularly in New York. And so we're excited to have her today to learn a little bit more about the conversation she's having around transportation. I'm hoping to cover and talk about her recent article on equity issues, focus on the Smart City Challenge in Columbus, Ohio, and some of the initiatives going on there, and then talk about infrastructure. And then if we have time, talking about, you know, this growing relationship and hopefully continuing relationship between technology companies and cities. So with that, maybe Laura, you want to talk a little bit about what you've been writing about and, you know, why you're excited to be here at TRB.
Sure. And thank you guys for having me. It's really fun to join this podcast. Mostly I'm excited to be at TRB to hang out with folks like yourself. Yourselves, I should say. This is, you know, where 90% of my sources are hanging out this week. So
that's convenient.
It's pretty special to get to put faces to names and faces to Twitter handles and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, I probably will be covering some sessions here and there and seeing what stories can come out of this. But obviously, it's an exciting topic to cover as a journalist, transportation, that is. And I'm looking forward to exploring new avenues for my work.
That's great. And so going to that equity piece, so the article that you wrote, believe it or not, in 2017, last year, which I'm still getting used to 2018, is, you know, kind of that article focusing on Columbus, Ohio, that really hit home for me is, you know, talking about the mother with kids who needs to make sure that she can get to her job, that she can have transportation when you can't afford a car, which is a luxury that a lot of us, I think, take for granted. And the other luxury that I know I take for granted is being able to call up an Uber or Lyft when public transportation isn't available. So it'd be great for you to talk, maybe for people that don't know the article, to talk about the title and a little bit what inspired that. Because a lot of people are watching Columbus, Ohio, because it did win the DOT Smart City Challenge, where it received approximately $40 million in grant funding to develop smart opportunities around technology and transportation. But what does that mean for equity?
Sure. Yeah. So I had started following the story in Columbus as part of CityLab's coverage of the Smart Cities Challenge back in 2016, which seems like a lot longer ago now. but yeah, this was this big, pretty meaningful competition that was put on by the Department of Transportation. $40 million from the DOT, $10 million from the Paul Allen's Vulcan Inc., right? So a $50 million grant awarded to mid-size American city that sort of proposed tech-based solutions to really pressing mobility challenges, you know, whether that's congestion or freight issues or kind of equity issues, like access to transit. And Columbus won that competition, and largely because of, I'm prepared to say, its emphasis on the sort of social goals that were part of its proposal. I mean, it was proposing to do lots of things with this big grant, you know, including piloting self-driving shuttles and putting sensors on its buses, and, you know, putting kiosks in neighborhoods, that kind of thing. And also it said that it planned to address its rather tragic rate of infant mortality. Since Columbus has one of the highest rates of babies dying before they turn one in the country. And they, you know, didn't map out specifics, but they said they would do this. And, you know, lots of publications that cover this stuff, including City Lab, made a pretty big deal of that because, you know, to sort of gesture to the, you know, the last part of the conversation you want to have today, right? There is this sort of growing, I think, consensus among city leaders that, you know, if we're going to start bringing tech into urban planning, then there, you know, it can't just be because for tech, right? It can't mm-hmm. be tech for tech's sake, but it's got to be, you know, addressing, identifying a problem and deciding on like the best solution to it. And that might be, you know, some self-driving car, or it might not be. So Columbus really seemed to be articulating a pretty strong and clear social goal. So I had covered that and I'd written about the plans. And this past year, something like 18 months had passed, and I pitched the idea of doing a follow-up. I had heard that Columbus had been working with Sidewalk Labs, which is an Alphabet subsidiary, to do some planning related to the infant mortality issue. And I'll explain that just really quickly, right? Like, what is transportation and infant mortality have to do with each other? Yeah, right. So, it's a sort of a multi-layered thing, as it turns out, right? There's, very, very, very profoundly poor pockets of Columbus. There's sort of the infant mortality crisis is very much concentrated in extremely poor neighborhoods, many of which have really, really low levels of car ownership. And Columbus is not a city that's by any means designed for transit or has a particularly meaningful transit system. It's just a lack of ability to get doctor's appointments, and B, it's the immense stress of using transit when you are an extremely poor woman who's often taking care of multiple children and struggling to use transit. Medical science agrees that stress is actually one of the biggest contributing factors to the loss of a baby, unhealthy pregnancy. So Columbus has been working. Wow. This is so long-winded. I'm sorry.
No, this is good.
Okay, good. You can cut it.
This is great.
Leave it in.
Just fascinated by this story. I'm still covering it. So I had learned that City of Columbus had worked with Sidewalk Labs, which had sort of during the competition said like, oh, you know, we're going to offer some level of pro bono participation or offer some technology to whoever the winner is. So Sidewalk Labs had come in and they'd done some focus groups with groups of moms who are, you know, working with nonprofits in the city because they're sort of vulnerable population, pregnant moms. And Sidewalk Labs had sort of come up with an idea to pilot an Uber for moms, an Uber if you're an expectant mom and you qualify basically for a shuttle service that already existed that Medicaid recipients were basically eligible for, but you know it's like a call ahead dial a ride service, but it totally does not work and there's all kinds of problems with it and it's just another level of stress. So basically like an on-demand, you know, Uber-esque version of that, like very obvious solution. And like, you know, as you were saying earlier, like obvious to anybody who's ever used Uber before, like this is an amazingly convenient thing. So I assumed actually going into, you know, doing a big follow-up, not a big follow-up, but a follow-up that, you know, I would learn about this pilot and like, you know, get to talk to the people in the city who are getting to, you know, implement it.
You should be well on its way, and, right? We're a year down the way.
Yeah, we're almost a year and a half. At this point, we're now a year and a half, more than a year and a half down the way. It is a 4-year grant cycle.
Right.
And it turned out that it really wasn't the case that, in fact, you know, the city was still, kind of in this, a planning stage, let's say. They hadn't really made any concrete decisions about where to spend money in any of the sort of, you know, buckets of proposed ideas that they had originally come up with. But, you know, they had spent quite a lot of time leveraging that initial $50 million grant and had sort of raised or like put aside close to like half a billion dollars in quote smart cities money. And what the city representatives told me was that at that point, there were no plans to actually put money towards this pilot to help the moms whom they sort of made very much the sort of media centerpiece of their victory.
Well, in their I previously worked for Secretary Fox, and I know that ladders of opportunity is a real passion to him. He would always, the first time he came in and talked to staff, he told the story about, literally growing up on the wrong side of the tracks. And, and the impact that has on mobility, but also on upward mobility and all of the other impacts. And so he started to really, weave that into these grant programs, both Tiger and then Smart Cities. And that was a real focus. And I think there was, there were other cities that seemed like more logical front runners, whether it's a San Francisco or a Pittsburgh or Austin that everyone thought was going to win, but they were so tech focused and
right.
tech for tech and,
right.
They've got Carnegie Mellon and they've got UT Austin and all that stuff. And then I remember hearing the Columbus folks come in and give the pitch, and it was like, wow, like they either just lined up perfectly and lucky, and we're lucky with this, or they got it because they focused it entirely on here's this very real problem, here's this very real metric. We believe tech can be that solution, but it was so very much focused on the access to healthcare and with the real key metric being that the infant mortality. So it's tragic that that was what got lost in the bidding or the feeding frenzy.
It's definitely fading away, kind of fading into the background by the time I got there. And to their credit or not, like there weren't really concrete plans at all in terms of where are we investing money specifically, but in terms of the kind of project priorities that they articulated to me and were sort of articulating to the city at that point, those sort of social goals were for sure fading into the background. The good news is that, the story, I met a number of vulnerable moms-to-be, vulnerable in the sense that they sort of fit the demographic in terms of who's susceptible to unhealthy pregnancies. I met a number of those women and followed them and kind of tried to experience what the bus system is like from their perspective and what they sort of make of a quote smart city, right? That's a very, very
I can
far
see that being
distant
heavily
land
mocked.
From where they live in Columbus, from where some of the women I met, Katrina in particular, was kind of the main character in the story, main focus. The good news is, after the story came out, it definitely got attention, was discussed, was definitely passed. I know that it was sort of passed between folks in the city and got some attention in the local media and for sure, like in our world, right? Which was really cool to see. And a few weeks after it was published, the city of Columbus actually went back to the USDOT and they changed the language in their current grant proposal. So basically what they're saying is that they now plan to devote some amount of money to continuing to plan and like support this pilot project.
You got them back on track. We'll use a transportation.
They would never say that I got them back on track.
But we know what happened.
But that was the timing.
It helped refocus the conversation.
So. Do you think it had to do with that one of the most obvious solutions and a seemingly simple in terms of all of the fun crazy tech that was being that was propositioning the city and coming at the city to be a crazy smart tech when they were really focused on this when it was as simple as basically subsidizing Uber trips? Is that why it perhaps lost some of the sizzle and the focus because a lot of this stuff is coming from these other companies that are that here's the tech and here's what it'll do rather than here's what we're trying to do now what tech will achieve that.
So you're asking like why would this part kind of fade into the background?
Oh, I'm saying was it the simplicity of that Google that the Sidewalk Labs came back and basically said they need a TNC service here that helps.
I mean, That probably would not be the reason that okay. I would ascribe. You know, I think that, and I don't mean to just single out Columbus, but you know, this is we're talking about like an equity solution, right? We're talking about, like subsidizing a public service for, you know, a population that can't afford it and do not have access to it otherwise. So I think very often, right, that's kind of the dimension of like planning in general that gets lost.
They were the least
equation.
Vocal at the Smart City Conference.
They're the least vocal, and these are pregnant women of color primarily. Mm-hmm. Like that's who we're talking about. They do not have a seat at the table. I shouldn't say that. Many women that I spoke to and many advocates who work with these communities feel pretty strongly. And I would say that, you know, even city officials that I spoke to too acknowledge that historically, you know, women of color sort of fit into this population, have not had a seat at the table.
And I think that's one of the best things about your piece is you open with the human element. I mean, the lead was beautiful. I mean, you're starting with, here's an actual experience that someone is having. And thinking about what Columbus, I'm sure they did whenever they created their proposal, was to go out and actually talk to these people and figure out what the problems were. But then they had to turn around back inside and like start to do the project. And I think that's sort of one of the issues is that these projects will start with all of the best intentions, but sometimes they need to be brought back sort of what their focal point is. I think that's one of the biggest values of people in the media, keeping people accountable. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
And maybe, you know, this made me think about a lot of themes, and it goes back to this federal funding theme around federal funding being used for transportation projects, smart city projects. So to Columbus's defense a little bit, one of the challenges they did face is a change in administration, and they were also trying to figure out, oh my gosh, how do we comply with all these guidelines and restrictions that come with funding? And so maybe they lost sight of their priorities. Mm-hmm. And it's great that they got refocused and now it's back a part of their grant. And I think the other thing this brings out to me, in my opinion, is how do we make sure that equity, access, those words aren't just talking points that are being used right now and do come to fruition and continue, you know, companies continue to be held to that standard as part of their proposals, as opposed to just the shiny object and people are moving around, and it is the haves that are moving around as opposed to the have-nots. And then my final point is kudos to Secretary Fox, because when he spoke 2 years ago at TRB, that ladders of opportunity, mm-hmm. enhancing mobility, using these technologies to enhance mobility, that was super inspiring to me and has helped, you know, inspire a lot of my work around these issues. So.
And people still reference that phrase too, and that sort of idea. I mean, he really inspired that in folks too. And I think it's upon us to continue that sort of focus on it. Because I mean, at TRB, you're gonna see any number of speeches and presentations and papers where equity is discussed, and then everyone eventually will go back and then maybe not change as much as they probably should. So it's about taking all of these great ideas and this really sort of socially conscious mindset and actually putting it into action. So that's the hard part.
So speaking about having difficulty translating necessary change into action, I want to transition over to your work on the New York City subways. Can you talk a little bit about,
sure.
you know, your writing on that and just the, you know, your general experience and what you've really been focused on there?
Oh man!
Where to start? Stretch a little bit here.
Well, you introduced me, Greg, as someone who rides the New York City subway frequently, and I admit that I avoid it.
were you
I
at one point?
I take the bus mostly at this point.
Okay, great.
And I bike and I walk. I'm one of these lucky people who actually, for now, I'll soon be transitioning back into the more normal commute boat of Brooklyn to Manhattan. But I'm right now commuting Brooklyn to Brooklyn, so I get to get it a little bit easy. The New York City subway. I have covered the subway story from a few different angles. I don't know. I think, like, I mean, last summer, the sort of quote-unquote summer of hell, which was really kind of related to Penn Station renovations, but became this kind of, like, metonym for everything that's wrong with transit in New York City. It's kind of when I think I was covering it most heavily. And I was kind of been really interested in this sort of accountability angle to it, right? You know, New York City's relationship to the state, like, this all dates back to Robert Moses, right? But it's all the sort of relationships between the MTA and the city and the governor all kind of set up to deflect accountability at, like, every turn. And, you know, the New York Times has obviously done an amazing job of kind of getting into, you know, investigating some of the very deep-rooted causes of the subway's deep, deep issues. I also did kind of a deep dive at the end of last summer into how scheduling problems, how the timetables may actually also be contributing to delays, which, you know, something like 67% of trains are, is it 67% of trains are arriving on time? I think that's it, which is, like, the lowest mm-hmm. of any transit system, I think, in the country.
Wow.
Which is mind-blowing, because nobody cares what time the train was supposed to come. I just care how long until the next train.
Yes.
But it's a frequency thing. I don't care that the 505.
Yeah, nobody
this isn't like this isn't Amtrak. Yeah. You know, it's one thing if you're going intercity. It's another. It's like, no, I just when is it? I don't care if this one was supposed to get here 3 hours ago. Is it coming soon?
Yeah, I mean, they've changed some of their metrics to make it more, like, in line with the passenger experience. But, yeah, I mean, what to tell you?
Maybe how do we move forward? I mean,
what was the most shocking thing, just aspect of New York City Transit and the way it's done, the way it's operated, anything about the, you know, that line of reporting that what really just blew your mind the most?
This was not so much mind-blowing as it was, like, not... like, just kind of amazing how not surprising it was or something. Like, when I was reporting so this subway timetable story is really wonky, but it sort of gets into, like, the philosophy of transit in this, like, really weird way. But I like, followed this rabbit hole, followed this transit researcher affiliated with MIT. His name is Adam Raby, and he conducts these, like, crazy, he calls them sort of forensic analyses of subway performance. And his is sort of his big thing, just, like, timetables that are created by, you know, subway schedule makers, right, who sit in offices and sort of, like, follow mathematical models that show, you know, that say, like, well, we know there are this many trains and we know the track is this long and we have this time to do this turnaround, and, like, if we schedule the trains every 5 minutes it should work just fine, you know. And this is very complicated, actually, because also the subway system is branching and you have to you know, have everything sort of in harmony with each other. His big thing is that, you know, that is all happening sort of in a box, like, far away from the actual world of operating a subway, which is a very human thing, for better or for worse. I mean, that's, like, a whole other conversation, like, why we're still using people to drive trains. There are lots of good reasons and maybe not so good reasons. But, right, I mean, you know, in addition to surge in numbers, you know, increasing number of riders, you know, you have the sort of you know, working norms established by unions. You have sick passengers, and you obviously have the array of signal failures and technological decay that is contributing to like, more and more unpredictable working environment.
And that's fascinating, because those people in that little box working out this algorithm are basing an algorithm on, like, this perfect world where nothing goes wrong.
And something I learned in that story, which I meant to get to faster, is that I, like, spoke with someone who does scheduling and for the MTA, and he let me know that, yes, in fact, like, the subway schedules, like, the people who are making the schedules know that they can't actually accord with reality, but they do it because they think the drivers are, like, kind of lazy. So they keep them going faster.
There's always the
And if you talk to drivers, like, that's crazy. They need more time. And there is good evidence to show that, like, they actually do need more time because there's the turnarounds and then it screws up the whole schedule. Anyways, but it's a very, very, like, wonky way of getting at a point that I think, you know, is true to much of the New York Times, is like their amazing reporting, which is I would go to much more than mine on this subject, which is like, you know, the bureaucratic problems, just a lot of management issues, seemingly, and communication issues, and accountability, deflection, and all that.
I think it's fascinating. I mean, both of those stories talk about the human element. Mm-hmm. And going back to the world of automated vehicles, I mean, we're trying to get rid of the human because I think the human's the problem. And I'm not even going to go there and figure out if that's good or bad, but I just think that's an interesting theme.
Yeah, but crashes are actually getting rid of 40,000 humans a year. And so if we focus on what the human element is with automated vehicles, I think there's that too. But we have to focus on not focusing on the tech.
But then we need to be able to trust the computers.
Right.
And who knows if that's going to work. And maybe an article that I read this weekend was The Case for the Subway by Jonathan Mailer. I thought that was really interesting, and the thing I took away from that, so I think the scheduling piece is huge, but this is the fact that we're depending public safety upon an antiquated signal system. And when you read in the story talking about guys in the parts department, because some of the infrastructure is so old,
they're the only ones making it anymore.
Literally, like, guys are like MacGyver in there, like, putting stuff together to try and make it work, because they're not making these parts anymore. So on the infrastructure point, at one part, how do we modernize and maintain the system and then also get it ready for the future? And who's going to pay for all that? Anyone?
Well, and that's where the city versus state finger pointing is
especially
so common. And it's, you know, that's trying to get through the news cycle rather than how do we make a 10-year capital investment plan that's, you know.
I mean, on my list of things to look for in 2018 is, like, a real answer on congestion pricing, right? This is, like, it's amazing. This is kind of becoming, even in my short time of, like, covering transportation as my job, like, congestion pricing has moved from, like, the very, very bottom of the footnotes of, like, transportation wonkery to, like, actual public debate. So much of that, I had a friend who texted me a picture he took inside, like, a bar bathroom that said, support congestion pricing.
What?
Was that NTRB?
That was not NTRB. That was
very
in New York.
It must have been City of Portland.
Yeah.
It was in New York.
New York.
That's how much the people want congestion pricing.
The bathroom.
It was the Uber team.
That's a joke. It's still being debated, kind of. But no, I mean, clearly there needs to be something done. And I mean, not just about the subway, but obviously traffic levels are horrendous, partly for reasons that seem directly related to the subway being in such disarray.
Right.
And congestion pricing may be one way of raising money and mitigating some of that.
But that'll still, you still need the accountability. You still need the process. You know, it's not just money. It is money, but it's also how we're spending and what we're spending it on. If we're still spending it on the same algorithm and the same, you know, distrust of a driver and all of that, that's where I think there is long-term frustrations of, like, if we're not actually writing the ship, if we're not redirecting the ship or writing the ship, that it's just becoming a bigger ship.
Right, and really they're just trying to make sure that the trains run 67% of the time on time, which is why the Trump infrastructure bill is going to save us all.
But I think that is why people were excited about something like the Smart Cities Challenge.
Yeah.
This opportunity to figure out what are better ways for us to use transportation and merge technology and transportation.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously there's challenges to even figuring out how do we implement that funding to then try and get the answers, and then how do we share it collaboratively around a best practices model. So I think that's what we're waiting to see, hopefully the next page of the story, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, I think the public's outrage cannot be discounted. Oh, yeah.
So in addition to congestion pricing, what any other issues that you're following or thinking about writing about in 2018?
So yeah, definitely the infrastructure bill, as Greg just pointed to a minute ago. You know, we're all on tenterhooks about that. And I mean, I know we were thinking about kind of discussing this, but I'm for sure looking at you know, the Quayside project in Toronto with Sidewalk Labs. I think that's you know, talking about tech's role in urban planning and smart cities and sort of where inclusion and you know, certainly privacy fits into everything. I think that's a really important project to watch.
Well, great. All right. Well, we really appreciate you being here and taking the time. And we look forward to reading more of your great articles. And thanks for your hard work.
Thanks so much for having me.
And really, Laura, where can people find you online?
Absolutely. So I am a staff writer at CityLab, which is part of The Atlantic. So citylab.com. My work appears there many times a week. And my Twitter handle is at Ms. Laura Bliss.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for listening and look forward to chatting again soon.